I do my show on the Heritage Radio Network because I think it's important to talk about the impact of technology on our lives.
I do my show to reach home cooks and help them do better.
Because I love getting together with people in the industry.
I like hosting my show because, to me, it's the stories about people and their relationship to food that help make the food more interesting and more delicious.
Our hosts do their shows as a labor of love, but we still need your financial support in order to keep the lights on and keep the tape rolling. Please become a member today at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a special show. It's April 2016. The guys from Alvina in Belgium are in New York City. They're visiting Fool's Gold and OEC and hanging out with some B-United guys. But we got a chance to record them at Jimmy's Number 43, have this nice little show. So George Flecken just here from B-United. And the guys from Alvina, why don't you introduce yourselves? Say your names and what you do at the brewery.
Hi, I'm Glenn, and I kind of do the barrel management and a little bit of the PR work.
It's great.
Yeah, I'm Davey. I'm doing the general management, the selling, you know, brewing sometime.
Brewing sometime.
Yeah, I just like that, brewing sometime.
Hello, I'm Mark. I'm responsible for yeast management, yeast propagation.
All right, and George, tell us about these guys and tell us what Alvina is, because I've had a few of the beers over the years. We've had the Cuvée Freddy. Right. Today we'll be drinking the Wild West.
Blackthorn edition.
Blackthorn. Yeah, this is a very special version of Wild West. But Alvina is obviously, you're listening to most of the staff right now of Alvina. This is the team, really. They're obviously a very, very small Belgian brewery that have been making amazing beer with their house strain of yeast, which is called Morpheus yeast. It's a culture, rather. Which I'm sure you'll hear about from Mark. But they produce some of the most fantastic sour beer on the face of the planet, and they're really one of the most innovative breweries, too, that I've seen coming out of Europe at the
moment. So, gentlemen, let's start. Tell us how you got started. Tell us what Alvina is and how you guys first got started working there. You go, Dave.
Yeah, okay. me and Glenn started in 2002 as home brewers. Started contract brewing in 2003, but of course contract brewing is only, it's not real brewing. So we set up our own brewery in 2004, got a license by the end of that year, and then since then, it only went up. We moved in 2007 to a bigger facility, and in 2011 into another bigger facility. That's where we still are now, so...
Glenn, what do you think of working with this guy?
I have to be careful now because he's married to my sister. So that's actually how we got to know each other. So before he met my sister, he didn't even drink beer. So you see, things can happen. It's great working together, not only with Davey, also with Mark. I think we are very complementary. Actually, we are different personalities, different. Specialties, but it all works really, really well together.
You know, we've been doing a lot of shows with Belgian brewers. Like we did an Orval show recently. You know, there's so much in America about American craft beer. How do you guys feel you stand out when you come to the States? You're here in New York and some other cities this week. What's it like for you coming to New York City trying to sell your beer?
Well, for us, it's a journey, let's say. To check out also what the status is in the States, how far you are with the beers. And we must say, we must be careful in Belgium. So I mean that in a positive way, that the States have gone a long way. And I think, you're ready to make some fantastic beers. And we must be careful in Belgium. I mean that... we cannot sleep and just trust on the standard values, we must innovate and think further. And that's a bit of a lack in Belgium for the moment.
Yeah, I noticed some of the older Belgian breweries, they said the American breweries are open to sharing new ideas, and then for a while some of the Belgian breweries were keeping secrets.
Yeah, I think it's a bit the same like we had the situation with the French wines. In France, for instance, at a certain moment they thought, okay, nothing can happen, we are the best in the world. But it did happen with other parts of the world. And that's the same with the Belgians, I think. And we know about that, we learned about that, and that's what we see actually happen also in the States. We are only 2 days here, and that's what we know already.
I think most traditional Belgian brewers are quite, how would I say, they want to keep things to themselves. And they don't really want to share information, they don't want to share experience, which is totally different with brewers outside of Belgium. For us, it's much easier to work together with brewers from England, Norway, share information than with some of the traditional Belgian ones who are actually neighbors. I mean, Omer van der Henste is like 10 minutes away, but we don't know anyone there. We know like 10, 15 brewers in London. Okay. That's the way it is, you know. We don't really mind. We work with people.
We do our thing, you know.
We are innovative. We do our own thing.
And we see it goes well. We are here for 2 days. We see our beers popping up in different bars, which is great, you know.
It's more than great. I don't think we ever imagined 15 years ago that we would be sitting here at Jimmy's doing a radio show about our beers. I mean,
I didn't either 15 years ago. That's cool having. So, what are some of the places you brought them, George?
You guys, I know, went to the Ginger Man Friday. Yeah. But we went to the Jeffrey today. I don't know yet. Where else have you guys been?
We did yesterday. Okay, right. And then, from next week on, it's like it's going to be quite a travel. We're doing a trade show tomorrow with Craft Beer Guild and New Plants.
Up in the Hudson Valley.
Then Philadelphia, Monk's Cafe, Washington, the Sovereign, Baltimore, Max Tap House, and ending up
in Baltimore.
Way South in Virginia, Norfolk, at the Birch. So,
George, what are some of the beers that you're selling besides this one?
Recently we got in two different versions of Wild West. This is obviously the Blackthorn, their Slowberry version. But Davey was telling me, and as I'm sure he'll probably tell you later too, when I was visiting him at least, that Wild West is very receptive to fruit additions because the beer itself, it really highlights those fruits, but everything works together very, very well. So we received two different versions of Wild West, one with plums. It was aged on about a ton almost, right, of plums.
A lot of, yeah. Yeah.
And then another version with grapes in it as well. And they've been fantastic.
So let's talk about the beer. So this is, tell us what the beer is and how you make it and everything.
This is Wild West. So it's a barrel-aged blonde sour. This one is actually one of our more rare beers. We added slow berries straight to the barrel, but the thing with slow berries is you can't buy them. You need to pick them, you need to harvest them in the wild. So we need like 15 kilos of slow berries for each barrel, and it takes about an hour to pick like 5 kilos. So it's a lot of work. Slowberry is like a small plum-like berry, but very astringent. But it disappears once you add it to the beer. If you would eat it, the slowberry yourself, you would say, oh no, it's really not nice. But it's fantastic in a sour beer.
Can I tell you how I bought this beer? So guys like George and the other guys at Be United, they send out little short lists of what beers are coming in. And we kind of flip a coin. Because there's so many good beers that they bring in. And so many from you guys. And I'm like, well, what can I get? I want to get one of in. And this time I got the Wild West. It seemed like for a long time I was getting a lot of Cuvée Freddy. So I don't know if you know how your beer is sold. But to me, it's like there's so many that you guys are making. I want them all. But I should just buy them all, right? How did you make this beer? So, what style? It's sour, but what kind of a sour is it? You know?
Yeah, well, the base thing is our yeast, of course. And like most Belgian breweries, especially the middle-sized one and bigger ones, the treasure is the yeast. So I captured it in nature myself in the centrum of France, which is called the Auvergne, which is an old volcano area. It's a mixed fermentation strain, as we call it. As a matter of fact, geographically, the brewery is based in the middle of the mixed fermentation area with the bigger breweries like Liefmans and Rodenbach. And also, historically, we are linked with the mixed fermentation area, let's say. So it's very obvious that we have chosen for this kind of beers. But what we did is that mixed fermentation and typical Flemish old brown was a bit in a forgotten area, let's say. And we have tried to innovate this kind of beer style completely. And I guess, yeah, what you drink now is the proof that we succeeded in that one.
Because most mixed fermentation beers you can drink in Belgium right now are all dark ones. Just doing it with a blonde one was already like...
that was totally new for the beer scene in Belgium.
Really new.
Blonde sours, except for the goose beers, of course. But blonde sours, that was totally new. So we tried it, we did it, and yeah, I think we have great beers now. Which we,
It's the first old brown... Flemish old brown, which is blonde. So yeah. Contradictionally, but we did it. Why not?
Well, I like at the end. I just got the end of the bottle. So
you have the Morpheus yeast in your glass now.
So that's the yeast.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Do I drink it or not?
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
It's very healthy. it's a mix of lactobacteria and two different Saccharomyces strains.
So when you guys are at the Jeffrey, which is a great beer bar in Midtown Manhattan, what were you guys having? Did you have any beer on draft? Did you have bottles?
Yeah, we had the two different Wild West fruit versions, so the plum and the grape. And then we also had Omega as well, which is on draft, and Cuvée Freddy too. So those four.
And a couple of bottles.
And several bottles as well, yeah.
So we're starting out, you're home brewers. And your contract brewing. So what were the steps that you made? To tell us what your actual brewery is like and how you started that after your contracting.
Well, we had, of course, a small brewing facility, actually in my backyard in a wooden shed. Brewing recipes, testing recipes for our contract brewing, of course. But at a certain point, we were becoming a little bit too big in that wooden shed, and the guys from Axis, they said, sorry guys, you can't do that anymore, you're brewing too much, you know, we can't do that anymore, you need a license. And then we made the choice, what should we do? Or we stop just as a home brewer, or we get our license, and that we did. And at the end of 2004, we were brewing very small batches, but as a licensed brewery, I think at that moment, the smallest in Belgium. So, but since then we only went bigger.
But mainly classical styles in the beginning, like a blonde, a treble, an imperial stout, which was 10 years ago in Belgium.
Very special.
That was already very special. Mark at that point wasn't involved in the brewery yet, but he was already a friend of us and also a home brewer, obviously. So he brought some of his beers and we tried... the first sours with his yeast, and it's he came with us as partner in the brewery, and then we kind of found our identity. There's no other way to put it. It's like, okay, this is the way we need to go. Easy and slow in the beginning, because sours is a very difficult market in Belgium. We've been dragging with all the gooses and so, but people in Belgium really don't drink sours. So we need to do it step by step, but I'm really glad that's the way we went. And then the barrel aging took it to another level. In the beginning, not a lot of barrels, like 10, 15. Now we're over 150 barrels, which is for a brewery our size. It's really, it's
you're
like 30% of what we produce is barrel aged. if you see it percent wise, that's
So George, it's pretty special that I got one case of Wild West, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it.
That's really special.
Yeah, this one.
We only made last year the 1,200 bottles from that beer, and we practically all sent them to.
And they sold out. That's 1% of our production.
Yeah, production. Yeah, that's it.
Imagine that you have 1% of stone in your basement.
Cheers. Well, we'd actually rather have Alvina. So.
Yeah, I know.
That is the thing. So I mean, that's what you guys look for when you're in Belgium. You think of. I think stone has a lot of presence there, doesn't it? I know there's that. There's some beer bars.
Yeah. Well, I was just saying Stone, but there was no special meaning why I chose that brewery. I just know it's big.
You read too 1% much. He reads the internet too much.
Beer advocate. Yeah, no. We do. We need to.
But, Davey, did you picked all of these berries, right?
No, Glenn.
Glenn did. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. That's my job.
Yeah. Right.
my therapy.
This is a good start. It's great talking to you guys. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Special show, it's April 2016. We're with the guys from Alvina from Belgium, right here at Jimmy's number 43. George from Beer United, you brought these guys in.
Indeed.
You're in New York City, Philly, D.C.
They will be, yeah. They're doing a whole East Coast tour while they're over here. So they're going to be working. This is not a vacation for them at all. We're working them hard.
Yeah. So what does Alvina mean to you? I mean, it's one of those many special beers you have at, you know, Be United.
And obviously in Be United, you know, there are a lot of different breweries that we import into the country. But to me, Alvina is especially special and unique in our portfolio, largely due to, you know, how they approach their beer with Morpheus yeast and their barrel aging, et cetera. And I think at a time now, obviously all this beer we're selling in the U.S., it's an increasingly competitive market. I mean, it's ridiculously competitive. And so you need to be totally unique in order to survive, and Alvina is absolutely that. They are their own personality. They're completely different to everybody that's on the shelves today. When you look now at the market for sour beers in the U.S., everybody is doing kettle souring, and it's very one-dimensional sour beers. But Alvina is
the complete
opposite of that.
Let's talk about what your method is, because you mentioned it's an oat brewin that's blonde. But tell us what is that method? You know, from start to finish, what are you doing to make this wonderful sour beer? And sitting at the bottom of my glass is the Morpheus yeast, which looks like a berry itself. But tell us, you're starting with this batch of beer, Wild West. Yeah. What are you doing?
Well, secret actually happens at home, in my place. I cultivate the yeast up to, let's say, 5 liters. I don't know how many gallons that is.
One gallon.
Something like that.
It's 5 liters.
Yeah. So that goes to the brewery then, and then it's cultivated further and up to about 5% of the final batch, let's say. and that is being pitched into the big fermentation vessel then. And then
we brew a regular blonde beer, as for this one, of course, a regular blonde beer, pitch the yeast in it, and let the yeast and the lactobacillus do their work. So yeast, of course, produces alcohol and other stuff. Lactobacillus are producing the sourness in the beer.
So after lactic acid,
of course, yeah. After a few weeks, as for this beer, we transfer it into wooden barrels, let it settle there for a few months. After a few months, we put in the berries, let it settle for at least half a year then, until we think it's ready to bottle. We pick different barrels, blend them together, and we have this wonderful beer.
And there it gains complexity. So I discussed that yesterday with Be United also, that it's all about time. And that's exactly what we don't have for the moment in our society, that's time. But if you need, if you want to create good beers, you need to give it time. Simply like that.
No, we never put a time on a beer. It can be 8 months, that's but it can also you, be... Yeah. 12 months, so we taste
doesn't
the barrel.
Doesn't matter how much they pressure us.
We taste the beer, and if we think it's ready, then it's ready. If it's not, then we wait a little bit longer. That's how it is. It's a natural product, so nature has to do its thing. But you can't force it.
Right, but I find it, I mean, that's amazing, obviously, because now, of course, with all these American breweries that are trying to produce sour beer, they go the fast and quick, you know, they go the fast route that's efficient, and they then throw whatever they need to in the beer, and then that's it, and then they release it, you know? So there's no real flavor development, really. You're just making acidic beer. Okay, great, you know? That's not fun. That's not what they should be doing.
It's time, of course, with the yeast, with the lactobacillus, time makes a good beer.
Right.
So,
and now I think a lot of American breweries don't, you know, they don't think they have time. They want to be as efficient as possible. And
oh, people ask us several times, you have to become bigger, guys. Become bigger.
Right.
No, you know, if you become bigger, you have to grow faster, which means you have less time, which means the beers will, quality will be lost. We don't want that. So it's great as it is now.
Right.
So, like, take a step back. So, there's so many great breweries in Belgium. We know the names. We know the Trappist breweries, the Abbey breweries.
Yes.
What is the culture of homebrewing in Belgium? And when you started, were other people homebrewing, or was that new?
Not that many. In the Netherlands, there were a lot. There were a lot of homebrewing clubs in the Netherlands.
They don't have good beer, is that
one? Well, no. Sort of, actually, because
at that time,
yeah, because in the Netherlands, what a home brewery in the Netherlands, his ambition is to clone a beer, to make a Rochefort at home, which is very close to Rochefort or an Orval or a Westmalle. That's what they do, try to clone things. A Belgian home brewer tries to make something which is totally different than what he can buy in a shop, because it's not that expensive to buy beer in Belgium, so he wants to be unique, and that's what we kind of try to do, and still try to do. Homebrewing is becoming more and more popular in Belgium, and I think we have a lot to do about it, because quite soon after we started our own brewery, we started giving homebrew courses as well. So, and even out of those courses, already 5 different breweries started in Belgium, which wasn't really the intention, because the intention of the course is how to make beer at your home. But some people got so infected by the passion and the beer microbe that they just started their own brewery. So and it's still growing. But everything is growing in the beer business now. It's booming. Yeah.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Are you still home brewing too, or now you're too busy?
Too busy, yeah.
Now we make sourdough breads and cheese and things like that, if we have some time left. So, yeah.
Keep it going. You guys can say whatever you want, too. If I say something, that means that you should be saying something. So,
okay.
You can ask. Why don't you ask a question? You ask him a question. A question you would have asked him when you were first starting. Things. What did you want to know when you first met these guys? And
he asked me how is the business doing? Are you earning money?
No,
that's not true. No, he came to me actually on a no, we were friends, of course, I knew him, but he came to me on a festival in the Netherlands, the Molen Festival, maybe you know it, maybe you don't. He came to me, we spoke about beer, we were both passionate, and he asked me, Davy, I have a yeast at my home, and I can do great things with it. Should you want to try it in your brewery? I was like, okay, yeah, but why not, yeah, give it a try, yeah, you know. And we did it. That was actually the first Kilrasses beer. Should be somewhere 2008 or 2009. The first Kilrasses beer we made with that yeast. And then we already thought, all right, guys, this is it. And we developed it further on. And it's gone where it is now. So, but actually, yeah, we were friends. But that was the first question he popped out when he wanted to, yeah, to know more about the brewery and to introduce his yeast, of course, to us. And, of course, we are extremely happy that that we did it. Now that's the identity of the brewery.
Without what happened over there at that festival, I'm sure we wouldn't be sitting here. I'm sure of that.
If that.
We might still have been a brewer, but it's...
To the Morpheus moment.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm called the Yeast Whisperer.
There's other guys with that name, you know.
Yeah.
There's one in California named Shay. Yeah. He's a yeast whisperer.
But there's only one real yeast whisperer. So.
And if I may give one advice, if people want to work with or play with yeast, it's all about passion and discipline. These are the two words. If you don't have the passion to look after your yeast every morning, to look how it is, to talk with it, to have contact with it, and to be very disciplined in what he needs or she needs. Is yeast feminine or masculine? And
it's both ways.
I don't know. There's a beer out now that's controversial because it says there's women's yeast in it.
You say he or she or it.
You have a science background?
Yeah. I'm an agriculture engineer in dairy science, actually. So we use a lot of lactic bacteria over there in cheeses and so on. So I'm quite familiar with the background, let's say. Yeah.
All right, you guys. I mean, like, so what? When was it that you decided to make this style of beer, though? I mean, you knew that once you found that yeast, that was the next step.
We tried it, made the carosses out of it. At that point, we knew what it was capable of doing. And it grew, of course. Belgium was not ready for the style yet at that point, but over the years it has grown, not only in Belgium but of course in the United States, but actually all over the world it has grown. Sour beers are more and more popular,
David, what's your background?
I don't have that.
He's an imposter.
I also studied chemistry when I was much younger than now. So, but I did several jobs, most of it in food companies. So it was an easy step that I made in 2006 to choose for the brewery and work full time in the brewery. So,
What about you, Glenn?
Well, I'm a teacher, actually. Studied to be a teacher, a math teacher, biology and chemistry. Figure it out. But I never taught one of these three things. I went into special ed. So teaching people with learning disabilities, with character disturbances, things like that. So very rewarding, but... hard as well. So the brewery was, especially in the beginning, a really nice side thing to do now, you know, to clear my head. Now it's getting more and more the opposite way. So I'm being more and more in the brewery. It was one day a week, now it's 3-4 days a week now. So which is a good thing. It's fun.
Well, we're drinking one of a New York City beer. This is from Three's Brewing in Brooklyn. And it's a simple beer. It's called Table Beer. It's a saison, a little hops.
Yeah, well, it reminds you of good saison, actually. It's a good beer.
I think we had one of the Trace beers earlier. Wasn't that the saison, the barrel-aged saison that we had next to, at the Jeffries?
The Jeffries. We probably had Three's.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so we. It's another. There's a lot of New York City breweries that are new, but this one, Three's, they make some good saisons.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very popular style now in the U.S.
Normally you can only make saison in Belgium.
Right. Okay. farmhouse ale.
Yeah, yeah, that's better.
Well, man, let's talk. I'm sure you're getting a great experience in New York City. What are some of the other beers that you want to talk about that you guys make? Let's talk about Cuvée Freddy. I've had that a few times. How did you come up with that? The story of Cuvée Freddy.
Maybe we should tell the story of the name, because that's a really fun story. I've got a really good friend whose name is David, and you know, my brother-in-law Davey, and I kept on mixing both names up, texting something to the wrong person, even calling the wrong person, and I knew David. To make sure that I didn't mix them up again, I said to David, "I'm gonna call you Freddy now. That's easier." So Davey and Freddy. And I knew he once said to me, "How cool would it be if I had a beer named after me?" So I knew he was coming to the brewery. So I wrote on a barrel, "Cuvée Freddy." At that moment, some American tourists were over there, took some pictures, and somehow those pictures got to Matthias.
No.
And yes, he said, yes, "We need that Cuvée Freddy." Yeah. So that's the story about today.
Yeah. I never knew that.
That was the first, the Porch Imperial Stout, which is not an Imperial Stout, but okay.
That was the recipe.
But we made a sour version, put it in a barrel, and just a test of one barrel.
Right.
And then Matthias said, "I want that beer." So we had to make more.
That's still the best salt beer in the US.
Yeah. And at that moment, or the next few years after that, we only sold Cuvée Freddy to the United States. We never sold it elsewhere.
Okay.
Now for 2 years now, we're selling it all over the world.
But wow.
So making it a lot.
So tell us, what is the Cuvée Freddy? It's an Imperial Stout.
Well, when we started the brewery 12 years ago, we didn't even know the style Imperial Stout. We just thought, okay, we make a stout, we make a dark beer, we call it an Imperial Stout. Of course, we know better now. It's not an Imperial Stout. It's just a Belgian dark beer.
Right.
A strong dark ale.
So, which normally wasn't sour at that point. It's still sold as the Porch, stout in the US.
It is,
we don't sell it elsewhere. It's only in the States now.
Oh.
But we also made a sour version of it, which has become the Cuvée Freddy.
I think the recipe is not entirely the same
anymore. Not yet, but okay.
If you would call it a fancy name, if you want to put it into boxes, I think people would call it like an Imperial Old Flemish Brown, something like that. Well, we don't do that, of course. Because we don't really want to think into boxes, because if you think into boxes, it ruins your creativity. So.
Right.
I can remember Cuvée Freddy, so it's actually the only one I can remember.
How does Freddy feel about the name now? Like the
beer? He's so cool that we, he doesn't only have a beer named after him or after his nickname, but it's kind of famous now, because we tell the story to everyone. But it gets even better, because Freddy was like single for a long time, and then he finally met a girl, Sophie.
Okay.
You hear me coming? And Sophie is like the leading lady of the beer, I don't know how to call it, beer connoisseurs, beer scene in Belgium. So she does a lot of things, especially for a woman and beer, to get more women into beer. So when we had the cuvée, Sophie.
Yep.
So that's named after her.
Right. This is a special version of Cuvée Freddy, I should point out.
It was called Cuvée Freddy Sophie. Dedicated to Sophie.
Yeah, we couldn't call it Cuvée Sophie in the U.S.
Yeah, so. That was great. Hold on 1 minute, we'll be back in a few seconds on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, we got Cuvée Freddy. The guys from Alvin in Belgium be united here. Jimmy's number 43, April 2016. And one thing you might hear in the background, a lot of Sunday nights in Jimmy's number 43, there's some folk groups here singing old-fashioned folk music songs, and kind of ties into the kind of beer these guys are making. So tell us again what you said. Some of the beers you want to make sure they take time. And you can't just say it's going to take 8 months, it might take longer.
Yeah, of course. It also depends. In summertime, it can go a little bit faster because the temperature is higher. In wintertime, you never know how cold it's going to be. So then it slows down the process. But we never compromise.
We follow nature, let's say.
It depends on the size of the barrel, the history of the barrel, how many times did we use it, how many times was it used, because we usually use wine barrels, so how many times has it been used for wine, one year, 2 years, 3 years, and it's all those different factors and kind of the art of blending that makes it that we can get a beer in a certain, we really, if we want more oak, we know which barrel we need to blend into. It's to get more oak. If you want more sourness, we know which one to blend into, and that's actually one of the most fun jobs we have. That's take samples from like 20 barrels, and then try them first without blending, and then this one goes out. Oh yeah, this one could be interesting.
It's a very boring job because we need to taste a lot. Really, it's hard work.
That's pretty funny. You guys are all kind of deadpan. I know it's a. It's a Sunday and you guys have been working a lot. It's great having you guys.
And jet lag. It's already midnight now, so...
Yeah. Get lit up, guys. Come on. if I'm going out, let's say I'm going to Belgium, just tell me what town is Alvin in. Tell me a little more about the neighborhood and the place. Why don't you start, George? Have you been there?
I have been.
So tell us where it is and what's it like when you go there.
Well, I mean, when I drove there, you go through a lot of small Belgian towns. It's very quaint, very nice. But my favorite part about Alvin is pulling up to the brewery because it's very unassuming. So you pull in and there's no sign that says, Alvin, but there's a sign that just says, it's big, it's brown. And it says in white text, it says Morpheus yeast inside. That's the only indication that this is where Alvin is. But it's fantastic. It's very, very small town, maybe very rural Belgium.
Actually, it's called Moon.
Moon.
Moon. Moon. Yeah. And we say we are the first brewery on the moon.
And is it called Moon Belgium? Or is it
M-O-E-N.
M-O-E-N.
You pronounce it like Moon.
Moon. I've always said Moen, so I'm glad that I know that.
It's just Moon. Easy, simple.
And what are some other like-minded breweries that you associate with there?
Oh, in Belgium, I think Hof ten Dormaal for sure. Dochter van de Korenaar is a really good one.
And in the States, Jester King, let's say.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And OEC. Now we know. Sometimes you see breweries and you're like, okay, they think just the way we think. And I think both Jester King and OEC
Tell us about going to OEC in Connecticut, because I went there 2 years ago and I loved it. What was your experience going to OEC? So Order of the Eccentric Boiler. What town is it in? It's in
Oxford, Connecticut.
In the middle of nowhere.
Central western Connecticut. Yeah, not too far from New Haven. Yeah. But we're really in the middle of the woods, which is nice.
So help me explain what it is, because when you go there, it's unlike any other brewery in the Northeast of America.
Well, we didn't visit another brewery, so we can't go there.
Trust me, it's different.
But driving there, indeed, those small roads into the middle of nowhere, and suddenly we arrive there, and there are maybe 150 cars parked out. People along the road having barbecues, drinking OEC beers. So strange.
And it was really cold.
And it was really cold outside, so that's so strange for us. You don't see anyone near, and then you come there, and all the people are drinking beers and having good times, which was already... For us, wow, it's going to be nice arriving here. So.
The reason there were so many people is OEC was doing a release of one of their very famous beers, so that's why there were so many cars. Usually there's not, luckily.
We have another friend from Belgium here, too.
Oh,
Marjorie, say hello, come in tight. Hello. You have to grab a seat. Come on, grab a chair.
Yeah, I'm with my family.
Oh, okay. We'll see you in a minute.
Maybe I can. You can.
Okay. But she's busy. But we're recording. This is a real Belgian.
Oh, she speaks French.
Belgium is very complicated, so
yes.
We're not going to try to explain it.
But so the OEC then for you, you know.
Right.
But I want to hear from you, so you're there, you pulled up.
Yeah,
the experience.
Yeah, of course, we arrived, have a beer, and then they showed us around, and then we immediately saw, right, guys, they are doing what we do, what we want to do, what we have the same philosophy. Yeah. That was great.
The cool ship, the boatload cooler, the greenhouses, you know, using the fruits for actually harvesting wild bacteria, things like that. That's like, okay, fantastic.
Yeah. And for the first time, I had the occasion to talk really for some time to Matthias. And I must say, yeah, we are completely in the same spirit, let's say. We didn't need a lot of words, but he understood me and the other way around, how he thinks about beer, about the yeast management and everything. So, yeah, it was really, I enjoyed it to talk to him, really.
I also like the way, the philosophy they have, like, okay, we're going to do small, very experimental things, only sell it at the brewery, which means that they do have the time, the passion, and yeah, the dedication to do what they want and not what customers want or whatever. Just do what they want, and people come, which was surprisingly. It wouldn't work in Belgium, I think, because
not the same way.
Not in that way. Like in a release that so many people would come just for that, wouldn't happen. But then again, in Belgium, it's not like there's a lot of breweries, but Belgians are very traditional in their thinking about beer.
Very conservative.
Very conservative.
The sour taste is still something that they have to learn. For me, it's a forgotten taste. In the 60s, 70s, we had all the sweet taste coming up with the Coke and things like that. And it still, influences how people experience beers. And actually, 1,000 years ago, it was a very common taste, the sour taste, because it was a way to conserve food, you know. And it was very common, and little by little, we remember that kind of experience, I think. And you are quicker in the States than we are to remember that taste.
Sourness is very complex. Scandinavia, without the United States, without a couple of countries, all the lambic brewers would have gone out of business for sure. We would have gone out of business for sure. So it's due to like a global saying that people really want to try those sours,
right,
but we can still do what we are doing. But it doesn't happen in Belgium. It doesn't really happen in the Netherlands. It's further away. We don't care.
I don't remember it, but I know of a time in the U.S. when no one would drink sour beer. They all thought it was bad. It was just beer that had gone off.
Spoiled beer.
But and in many ways it is, but it's beautifully spoiled beer, I suppose.
It's controlled spoiled.
Exactly. Yeah.
But sometimes in Belgium there are even discussions about like the term sour.
Right.
Like lambic brewers don't really like it. For them, lambic brewer, they say, but sour is infected beer. It's gone wrong. But that's easy because they have a name for their style. What would you call like the blonde wild beers? It's not even wild, but because we control the yeast. So how
right.
What exactly else would you call it except a sour?
Yeah. Right.
We did our own description, let's say. It's on all of our t-shirts. It's a Flemish sour ales. That's the name we want to give it.
Right.
Simple like that. We are in the Flemish part, so it's sour and it's an ale. So
no?
We like simple things.
It's useless to make things complicated. So.
Yeah.
What about you, David? You agree with that?
Of course. Why not? Why shouldn't I agree?
So if some of our American listeners, or you know, we have listeners in Sweden and England, you know, if they want to start off with sour beers, besides yours, what are some other ones they should try? Maybe other Belgian beers worth trying.
I think we
just Alvin. Just Alvin.
Yeah, we are pretty for the mixed fermentation. We are pretty unique.
Unique, yeah.
And of course, yeah. Next to that, it's another family, but related in a way, is the lambics. Yeah. So yeah.
A lot of other Belgian sours are not sour anymore. They sweetened. They are pasteurized. They are not natural anymore. It's just yeah. Luckily, we reinvented the style because yeah. Beside of that, there's nothing much left in Belgium for that style of beer.
Right. There are interesting breweries in Europe who are making really good sours. Yeah. I'm thinking like Lover Beer in Italy, Red Church, Wild Beer in England, Brickerit in Sweden. So we see all over Europe some very interesting, but there's not many. I think maybe 10 all together. So it's still a very difficult thing to do, making a sour.
It's another level of making beer, certainly, to have the quality which is each time constant and the same and so on. For sour beers, that's quite
it's also a choice, I think. I think that's why not that many brewers want to try it, because if you start with sours and it goes wrong, you can't control it, forget about making clean beers.
Right.
So you can't make clean beers and you can't make good sours. Then you're in trouble, of course. Yeah. So that, I think that's why some brewers actually, or breweries actually have like two parts, the clean part and the wild, dirty part. Like Beavertown has something like that.
Right.
And they do great things in that, but they will never mix both. They even change like boots when they go from one building to the other.
Yeah.
Things like that. So actually, they're so worried about it.
I'm like a hot dog factory.
Yeah.
And you know that's funny, because you know meat process.
Actually, I have a second job also in a big American company, let's say. And there I'm just killing off bacteria, so the other way around. So if you know how to kill them, you also know how to keep them alive.
Yeah, in a good way.
In a good way.
So are there any characteristics of your brewery that you allow for because you're doing sour beers?
Yeah.
Like, do you leave cobwebs in the window? Do you have any?
Well, we can't. We are controlled by food agency. We are a very clean facility. But that doesn't mean you can't make sour beers, of course.
So
you
don't
need
yeast,
a dirty building to make sour
time.
Beers, of course. Yeah.
You must know in the process where to let nature go and where to be very clean and hygienic and so on.
Yeah.
You just have to know where. It's the same like making cheeses. In certain part of the process, you must let the nature go to have an excellent cheese. And the milk is something very special in terms of hygiene, needs a lot of attention. Certain parts needs hygiene, otherwise. And all the parts, you just let nature go. And you must know where to make the distinction. And master that.
Yep. Absolutely. Well said, Mark.
You can say more.
I cannot repeat that.
I don't want to ask you questions because I want you guys to say what you're thinking. But maybe George will jump in here and a little more of this Alvin mystique.
Where the Alvin mystique? I think the mystique lies in Morpheus's, really. But I'm not. Yeah, I don't know what else to add here. Really, I'm not sure. I didn't see any cobwebs. It was very clean to me. It looks good.
Of course it is.
And then last thing, so like your base ingredients, like your grains and your malts, tell us about those. And are you able to work with any malts, or do you have certain malts that you work with?
We want good quality, of course. We tried different malteries now, but we found good quality now in Holland. Which is doing great. So, but of course you can do it with any malt. The malt is the base of your beer, but of course it's all the rest that makes it a good sour beer, not the malt.
It could put the sourness in a certain direction.
In a certain direction, depending on...
Let's say if you use rye, it's going to give another sourness than if you just use barley malt. If you use wheat, it's going to be a little bit different. And okay, playing with that.
Yeah, and also the malted grains, unmalted grains, yeah. All of that, and combinations of everything.
That's basically the difference between like making Berliner Weisses and just blonde sours. And
they put last one, Belgian culture. So I know, what language do you guys speak in your town in the brewery? And I know because our friend Marjorie walked in and she said, oh, she's speaking French.
So you're speaking Dutch.
You speak Dutch.
No, yeah. Not Dutch.
Flemish.
Flemish. Dutch.
It's a difference between Dutch and Flemish. It's like American and English, you know?
Yeah.
It's officially it's the same language, but we have other expressions, other pronunciation and so on. So, yeah, okay, that's the difference.
With some French words in it.
With some French words.
And English words. And,
It's a big
but a good thing is.
You guys were fun. I know Mateo said if you came and hung out with me, we'd have some fun, and we will have more fun. quick wrap up. So, again, George, tell us again what you're doing in the States with these guys, a few of the special bars are going to.
Alvin are in the country to tour the East Coast and see some of our best accounts on the coast and sort of spread the word of Alvin around. Not that it really needs a lot of spreading, to be honest.
They just want to see our faces.
Exactly. They're beer celebrities, really. So they're here briefly to tour the U.S., and they're bringing the word of Alvin and Morpheus East around the world. So, yeah.
That's great. You guys, just say your names each before we say goodbye.
I'm Davy.
What's your full name? Davy what? Your full name, family name.
Oh, my family name, Davy Spiesens.
Marc de Keukler, don't try to pronounce that in English. Impossible.
And Glenn Castellane.
All right, I couldn't repeat any of your names. Glenn, thanks to Glenn.
Wait, Davey. Jimmy, what's your family name? Come on.
Jimmy Carvoni. George and Davey for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, suppliers of world-class ales and lagers. Thanks to our producers and our engineer. And I think Dave is going to clean this up, and you'll probably hear this in spring of 2016. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, yeah.
Woo. Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.